Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
A movie back in the late 80s. And the theme song, actually the theme song of the movie, was a leadership question. It was a leadership question for a silly movie. In fact, the anti-hero of the whole movie was the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. But the question of the movie, the theme song of the entire movie, is a question you should be asking yourself in leadership. Who are you going to call? For the movie, it was Ghostbusters. Who are you going to call? Who are you going to call? Now, the answer to that question in your life as a leader, the value that you offer to the world, the skill set that you bring, yeah, that's what determines your impact, influence, and income. That's what we're going to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast, and I was listening to another leader talk this morning, and one of the things he said was, you know, the type of rescue that you need is determined by the incident or the problem or the crisis that you face, and because of the type of rescue that you need, that determines the type of rescuer that you're going to have to call for. In his illustration, he said, if I wake up in the middle of the night and I smell smoke and I see flames in my home, then I'm going to turn to my wife and say, I'm getting the kids. You grab the phone and call 911. Get the fire department here as fast as you can. I'll get the kids and meet you outside. Because there's a fire, you need to call the fire department. That's the problem. That's the rescue. That's the rescuer you need. He said, on the other hand, if I am dead asleep and I don't smell smoke, but I hear someone rummaging through my home in the middle of the night, I'm going to turn to my wife and I'm going to say, I'm going to get the kids and make my way outside after I take care of this burglar. I need you to grab your phone and call. And his crowd said, the police. He said, no, an ambulance, because I'm about to go take care of business. You grab your wireless hole puncher and go that way, and I'll grab my wireless hole puncher and go that way, and we will take care of business. So call an ambulance. They're going to need one. They shouldn't be breaking into my house in the middle of the night. The type of problem you have determines the kind of rescue that you need. And the kind of rescue that you need determines the kind of rescuer that you need. Now, I don't know if you've watched Ford versus Ferrari. The whole battle between the technicians and the engineers as they work their way to the top for the Formula One race and the Grand Prix and all of the things that they fought to see who was going to be better at the top of the class for that car. They introduced the Mustang as a lead sled. It was small, it was heavy, it was underpowered. It wasn't big enough or fast enough to be a muscle car. It was just kind of a, you know, grandma's grocery getter kind of a car in 1965 when it was launched, 64 and a half. But by the 1970s, the Mustang was world class. Still the average everyday man's car. Today, the Mustang battles with the Dodge Demons and the Camaro Demon Killers and all these other, even the Corvettes. Some of the Mustangs can compete with the Corvettes. If you're into cars, that's a big deal. But see, it was the Ford Motor Company. It was the guys at the top in the engineering department. It was the Lee Iacocca's who took over Chrysler and Mercedes. It was those leaders of the day who said, what is the problem we face? And how are we going to fix it? I listened to Brandon Dawson talk about the breakpoints in a business as you move from the 150,000 margin to the 250,000 margin. And actually, he doesn't even talk about the 150 to 1 million. He says, if you're making 150, 1 million is just another thing another day in the park, so to speak. But when you get to the 3 to 5 million, there's some things that have to change. And to go from 5 to 15, some things have to change. And from 15 to 50 or 100 million, things have to change. And then after that, if you don't have all your ducks in a row, your foundation is going to crumble because you're just stacking floor upon floor upon floor upon floor. You're creating problems that you don't have the ability to sustain. That's a problem because your leadership isn't ready for that. In fact, I've spoken before about a call that I was on that Brandon was on. A lady called in and she said, we've got a great CEO. He's great. And our business is doing about $750 a year. And before she could get the next words out of her mouth, Brandon replied, said, "You don't have a great CEO." She said, no, we do have a great CEO. I said, "No, you don't." She said, "How do you know that? I haven't even told you all the details about my business." He said, "Because if you had a great CEO is not going to work for less than $1.5 million. So unless he's taking every dime your company's making, you have somebody who's serving good as a CEO right now, but they're not a great CEO because your company wouldn't be making $750 if you had a great CEO. In fact, if you had a great CEO, you'd probably be making $2.5 million. What does that tell you? The leadership value, what you're worth, what you ought to get paid, is directly related to the problem you solve, directly related to the rescue you offer. It really does baffle me, though, when you look at the NFL or the NBA or the MLB, and what you find is you've got people who, well, so he can throw a spiral football, so he can throw a fast pitch, so she can hit the jump shot from the three every single time. Great. But are they really worth $13, $14, $25, $75, $150 million over the life of their career? We've got surgeons who are taking brains out and putting them back for less than $500,000. That's a leadership problem that needs to be solved right there, in my opinion. This balance of scale, this is not about male and female. This is not about sexual orientation or gender. This is about the problem that you solve. What is the scope of the problem that you solve? What is your skill set in solving that problem? If you, as a leader, understand what your value is to the person who has the problem. Now, part of that's determined by your skill set, your education, your aptitudes, also your willingness. How much willingness did you have to sacrifice to reach the place in life to increase your value and your skill set? How much have you studied to show yourself approved and capable and worthy of digging into that topic? I mean, I could raise my hand today and go, "I'll do brain surgery. I could be perfectly happy on $500,000 a year." Not qualified. I got no medical studies that would even come close to saying qualified for brain. Do not let me cut your head open and mess around with your brain. I'll do it from the outside through your ears, but don't let me inside your head with a knife. Bad, bad, bad idea. Because I'm not qualified. I'm not competent. That's not the problem I solve. But for a lot of leaders, the challenge is they truly believe you can throw any problem in the world at them and they will find a solution for it. It's not true. From JFK to Ronald Reagan, there were different problems to be solved in the world. Now, JFK and Ronald Reagan both faced one major problem. That was the Cold War with the communists, known at the time as the USSR. In the time that JFK dealt with USSR, it had to do with the Bay of Pigs and nuclear weapons on an island close enough to hit Florida in a sneeze. And so that whole crisis, the Cuban Missile Crisis, that was a big deal, and that had to be dealt with by a leader who had the capacity to deal with that problem. Diplomacy, not war, was his way of dealing with things. He had some small skirmishes, but it never escalated to the war. On the other hand, by the time Ronald Reagan was in office, he's still dealing with the same group of people, the same desire they had to take America off the map, the USSR. Differently, though, his diplomacy sounded a little different. He said, "You know, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Let me be really clear about this. We will destroy you." But by the end of his service to our nation, we heard those infamous words, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And East and West Berlin were reunited, and the communist bloc began to crumble, and nations like Afghanistan began to see freedom for the first time in 50 years. I've had lengthy conversations with a former United Nations ambassador from Afghanistan. He lived there under Soviet rule. He lived there under the Taliban rule. He now lives in the U.S. as an exile, as an asylum. The kind of leadership problems you solve are directly related to your value as a leader. Now, I want to carry this one step further because there are a lot of entrepreneurs today who are launching businesses. They have a great idea. They have some skills. They have some money to lay on the table. They have the willingness to give up the sleepless nights of working for themselves and grinding it out until it works. They're ready to do the online social media promotions to let the world know about their company. They're willing to do all of this work to build the empire. And many that I encounter, because what I focus on is the story that you tell. And it's not just your life story saga, and it's not an elevator pitch, and it's not the speech that you give from the platform necessarily. It is, what are the stories that you tell that convey to the audience that you have the credibility to do what it is you claim you can do? Sometimes you see that as social proof. Sometimes you see that as, I've been where you are, I get it. There's a great scene, I wish I'd pulled the clip up for it, from Secondhand Lions, where one of the actors is sitting at a bar having a drink with a friend of his, and these young 20-somethings come in all rough and rowdy, and they're being obnoxious, and they're being rude, and they're making fun of the old man. And the old man turns around and grabs one by the scruff of the neck. And as he does, his friend says, don't kill him. Just don't kill him. And the young man laughs as if, what is this old man going to do? So as he pins him to the wall, he says, son, I fought on 5 continents, 2 different wars. I've killed many, many men, some with my bare hands and some with weapons you couldn't describe. I've also watched good men die. I've fought hundreds, led thousands into war, and only loved one woman. And you're not going to talk to me like that. And that you hear in that brief threat, that description, a resume that ought to send chills down your spine if you're standing face to face with him thinking, I'm going to take this one out. You better think twice about his skill set, about his history, about where he's been and what he's done. You might want to reevaluate your proposition. Think twice about what you're capable of and what he's capable of. See, when I say telling stories, I mean the ability in a line or two to speak of your credentials without necessarily bragging, just kind of point to the facts. I have one particular client right now who's working on some things, and one of the talks that she's about to give is about not enough. We all feel sometimes like we're not enough. But every time we're on our coaching calls together, behind her is a whole wall of championship medals, trophies that she's won in various levels of competition. She also has a master's degree. She also has a lengthy career in the medical profession. And it's really hard to look at someone like that who is a wife and a mom and an accomplished competitor and an accomplished multi-degreed medical professional and say, how can you feel like you're not good enough? And yet we all kind of struggle with it. So let me ask you this question. If you're looking at your life right now and you're thinking, I'm just not good enough, how do you cope with that? Isn't someone who's accomplished that many things and said, I know what it feels like to feel like you're not good enough, but I also have the solution. Because I've been there and I've battled through it. I faced it and I've overcome it. Isn't that the kind of leader that you want solving the problem that you have? I remember in one of my John Maxwell trainings, this was a live training many years ago, but John Maxwell said he had a chance to interview a guy by the name of Jack Welch. Jack Welch was known for a while as America's CEO. He's one of the top guys like Peter Drucker on management and change. And John said, Jack, tell me this. When you go in as the headhunter into a company, when they've called you in to rescue because the company has fallen apart and they can't get anything right, how do you decide which leaders you keep on the team and which leaders you get rid of? And Jack said, I fire them all. He said, all of them? Are you telling me there's no chance there's a good leader left? He said, well, where would I find a good leader? And he said, well, you know, maybe they're in the VP range or the executive director range. They haven't quite made it to the C-suite. They didn't really have control of the decisions that were happening. And so, you know, it's not really their problem. He said, look, I look at it like this. By the time they called me in, the organization is in so much trouble that I have to come in and completely clean house, clean sweep, the entire executive suite gone, no negotiation. Chances are all the VP level gone, no negotiation. Executive level? Yeah, maybe. But he said, the truth of the matter is, if you had a VP or another executive who had the wherewithal to identify the problem, They should have also had the wherewithal to redirect the leader in charge. Now, from that conversation came the depths of the book known as the 360-degree leader. It's one of the books I'm certified to train on. The concept is that wherever you are in the organizational chart, whether you're at the very top or you're at the very bottom, your ability to influence people above you, on the same lane with you, below you, so to speak, those that you supervise, manage, oversee, your ability to interact with and lead all of them is a critical skill set in the problem that you solve. And if you can't influence in all directions, influence those that supersede you, those who supervise you, those who speak into your life, those who oversee you. If you can't speak into their life, into their business practices, into their decisions with enough respect for them to say, huh, hadn't thought about it like that. Maybe I should reconsider. If you don't have that kind of respect with them, that kind of leverage with them, that ability to bring things to light that they might reconsider, then chances are, when Jack Welch comes in, you're gone too. Even if you identify the problem, even if you wrote many letters about the problem, if you don't have the influence to affect the change, then you're not the problem solver who's going to have the opportunity to stay and do it. But I think through that for a minute. As a leader, if you brought somebody in as a coach, as an interim CEO, as a CFO or a fractional CFO, and you said, look, our problem is we're way behind on our debt structure. We can't figure out why it is that our profit margin just keeps collapsing. We can't figure out what the problem is. Is it the wrong product? Is it the wrong market? Are we launching them at the wrong time? Or what are we doing wrong? If you hire somebody to come in and solve that problem, and 2 months, 6 months, 2 years into that problem, they haven't solved that problem, what are you going to do? You're out of here. I'm going to get somebody else who can do that. And I might be upset with you that you said you could do that and you haven't done that. Why haven't you done that? See, that's exactly what I mean by your value is directly attached to the problem that you solve. Now, if the problem that you solve is, and there are many, 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 millions, perhaps millions of coaches in the coaching space who will tell you on their resume, on their business card, on their website, the first thing you talk about is mindset. It's all about mindset. Well, yeah, a lot of it is mindset. But is that a problem, dollars-wise, that an executive, an organization, a company is going to solve? Now, you could ask any client who's worked with me over any period of time, 2 months, 6 months, 9 months, 1 3-hour coaching session, what I do. Ask them what I do. I dare you. I do it all the time. It's kind of funny. Most of my long-term coaching clients will tell you, what you do is so much more than what you tell people you do. I don't sell myself as a mindset coach. But I promise you, when you start telling stories and we start looking at the words you're choosing and the way that you're structuring them, it's going to impact your mindset. It's going to impact the way you talk to yourself, the way you think about yourself. Most of my clients within 2 to 3 sessions find themselves in tears, and they usually look at me and go, I don't even know why I'm in tears. Like, all I do, it's because the story that you tell to the offering of your public service, the stories that expose you to the world to say, here's why you should hire me, those stories come from deep inside. That's why I say I'm a pineapple squeezer. My job is to squeeze the pineapple, see what's in there when you're under pressure. If ketchup comes out, we have a problem. If I squeeze you until the pineapple juice just begins to seep out in every direction, then I put you under enough pressure to see what's really inside, and that's when the story that you tell begins to change the who that you are. It also changes the world around you. It will change your leadership skill. It'll change your skill level. It'll change your capacity for empathy and understanding. It'll change your compassion level. It will also demonstrate, perfect, hone, and sharpen your communication skills, your leadership skills, your ability to influence, persuade, and convince other people. It's all in the story. If you think your story is just about getting your novel out there, your memoir published, I'm probably not your guy. But if you believe that the things that you say every time you're in front of a room, in front of a microphone, in front of a camera, are important to solving other people's problems, we should talk. When you see someone who's skilled at a high level at solving a problem, you often see that their ability to perceive the problem, like Brandon looking at somebody's company and says, we're making $750, we have a great CEO. No, you don't. Well, how could you possibly know that? Because if you had a great CEO, see, there are signs of success and there are signs of failure. And there's some things that you could point out from the outside and say, these are generic. It's not about you personally. It's not about your company specifically. It's not about the product set that you offer, the market that you serve. It's not about any of that. It's about what it takes to succeed at the next level. And there are some generic things that everybody has to accomplish to succeed at the next level. I just yesterday picked up this book, Jack Welch. It's called Winning by Jack Welch with Susie Welch, his wife. Randomly open to page 178, and I'm going to give you an example of that level of skill set that resides in an expert rescuer, that leader who comes in from the outside and says, I can see the problem from here and I have a solution for it. And on page 178, at the end of a chapter, he just asks some questions. I want you to write these down and just sit with these questions for a second and ask yourself how an outsider who's never been in your business would know to ask these questions, and then ask yourself, can you answer them? If you couldn't answer them, then go grab this book because it's probably got the advice you're looking for. Here's the questions. This is called slide 4, page 178. He says, what's around the corner? What scares you most in the year ahead? What one or two things could a competitor do to nail you? What are one or two things a competitor could do to nail you? Number 2, what new products or technologies could your competitor launch that might change the game? Can you imagine in the world of wireless devices when the iPhone and the iPod began to change the market? Nokia has been playing catch up since then. I had a Nextel flip phone, the little walkie-talkie kind, before the iPod and the iPhone and all those started taking place. But see, now I'm an Apple user because I can integrate my Apple iPhone with my Apple iPad with my 4 Mac laptops, and everything that I do in the cloud is generated from one to the other. That's a very handy thing for me. It makes editing video a whole lot easier. What could your competitor do in the way of products or technologies that would change the entire game? That's looking around the corner. If you're not asking those questions in your business right now, you're behind the gun and you don't even know it. The eight ball is chasing you down. I want you to think of Raiders of the Lost Ark when he's running out of the tomb and that giant stone is coming. And he just at the last minute falls, and where he falls is into channel and the rock rolls over him. But then it's turning around and coming back. That's what's around the corner. Something's coming to crush you. You better be a problem solver. And the skill level at which you can solve problems, the incident from which you can rescue people, that's going to determine your value. Final question. What M&A deals would knock you off your feet? M&A's, merger and acquisitions. Oh, what if somebody looked at you and said, I kind of like you. Now, you may not know this, but a lot of mergers and acquisitions are not looking at a company going, hey, let's come together and let's be partners. In fact, I know of companies that specifically have bought out their competitors for two reasons. Number one, to stop the competition. And number two, to buy their customer list. I'll write you a check for the whole business. You go retire, give me that customer list. Because I know how to mine your customer list to get more money out of it. I can get more relationship, more product sales of my product than you're getting of your product because what I offer is different, but we have the same customer base. So rather than let's compete and try to see if my better product wins, why don't I just buy you out, you go retire, and I'll sell my product to your customers. That's a pretty common thing. So what M&A deals would knock you off your feet? See, the challenge for a lot of small business owners is they poured their heart and soul into their business because they believe in their business, they believe in their product, they believe in their customer base. It's not an idyllic thing for them to say, I'm going to merge with somebody else because I just want the payout. No, most of them, they're cause-oriented. They run their small business because they love their audience, they love their product set, they love what they do. And the thought of selling out isn't comfortable to them. Sometimes you just don't have a choice. What could your customer do to nail you? What could your customer do to compete with you with new technologies? What if they proposed, if your competition proposed an M&A? Could you survive it? Could you stand up? I don't care where you are in your business. I don't care where you are in your leadership. Your value as a leader is directly tied to the magnitude of the problems that your skill set allows you to solve. Get ready to sharpen that skill set. Get better at what you do. Get that edge razor sharp and get clear on what problem you solve and who you solve it for. And whether you're speaking on the platform or leading a large company, who you help and how is still the name of the game. And the better you can answer that question, the better your paycheck at the end of the day. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.